Hello and welcome to the Culturefile Weekly Cold Snap Edition with me, Luke Clancy, and some stories that could be used in place of earmuffs. This week we're at Imma in Kilmainham, getting an exhibition tour from a 7-year-old, and indeed a 5-year-old. Illan Piper Killian Vallely has teamed up with the Fidelio Quartet and a handful of Irish composers for what nobody involved is calling a contemporary classical trad crossover. But we log on this time with the broken promises of cyberspace, as well as some fresh new ones, from the dungeons of Alte Munzer in Mitte in Berlin. At this week's Games Ground Gaming Festival in the German capital, our reporter Louise McMahon visited what was billed as a VR dungeon to meet some of those in the expanding field of cyberdelics, which brings together the hippie flavour of the early internet with what was once called high technology, to see what kind of mind expansion might be achieved now that immersive audio and video and other more exotic tools exist. There among the crowds wandering the dungeon in VR headsets, Louise got demos of some cyberdelic projects and met with one of the area's evangelists, Jose Montemayor Alba.
Woo! Okay.
Maybe not that one.
No, well, and it's moving. The stars here are moving.
So I'm the co-founder of the Cyberdelic Society and the CEO at the Cyberdelic Nexus. The dream is still alive. We are a bunch of researchers, academics, artists, developers, curious minds, psychonauts, all kinds of people coming together to explore the intersection of how art, technology and consciousness can be explored through these mediums.
My hands are in the shape of constellations.
State shifters, realms of flow.
There's still alive the dream. Most of the cyberdelics that we have showcased or that are being created, they bring the spirit of play, curiosity, awe, inspiration. When you think about cybernetics, it's an umbrella term that encompasses all kinds of technologies. The meaning of the word cyber means to navigate, to control, or to steer. But when you merge it with psychedelics, which represent these mind-manifesting experiences that transcend the boundaries of ordinary perception, cyber becomes the steering wheels that teach you how to navigate these states of mind. The dream was still alive. There are a whole realm of experiences creating tools, techniques, stories, and multiplayer experiences in order for us to explore what it means to be human, what it means to expand our awareness, what it means to connect in different formats. Even before the 60s psychedelic revolution, researchers were exploring with how can you alter perception by combining different techniques like sensory deprivation and some drugs like ketamine or acid. I'm talking in particular about John C. Lilly, who wrote the book Programming and Metaprogramming the Human Biocomputer, which laid down a format in which people could explore a very unique approach towards the mind through the interaction of both the altered state produced by the molecules and the technological hardware to mediate it. And that catalyzed a lot of things. The Merry Pranksters, the acid Kool-Aid test, which gathered a lot of very fascinating minds in America that were exploring with LSD and also dream machines. Because of the psychedelic experience, many of the technologies that we have today exist. For example, the iPhone or the internet. Forms of communication that we today do for granted probably were inspired by these altered states that kind of revealed an aspect of the logos, and basically we got our rational minds and creative wisdom to put them together into tools that allow us to expand the boundaries of the physical.
So I'm seeing red, yellow, blue, black, pink triangles moving around.
John P. Barlow, around the 70s,
80s. I'm starting to hear some audio.
He wrote the Declaration of Independence of Cyberspace, which in a way came from a sense of fear that at some point corporations will take over and they will destroy the possibilities of what we could create with it. It kind of happened. However, from the backlash of the promises from the techno-utopians, there was an emergence of new science fiction views about how the future could potentially evolve. For example, the cyberpunk movement. We understand that technology will evolve to a point, you know, beyond our imaginations, but the division of social classes will not end. Promises of the techno-utopians were perhaps so inspired by these kind of movements, like with gurus, that represented kind of a vision of humanity that perhaps was not realistic. Now, this backlash, specifically on the cyberpunk edge, in these novels, we see that there is this discrepancy between this techno elite and the rest of us who were having access to all these toys and techniques, but within a system that is oppressive. And that's when the cyberdelic idea comes from, as a way out or a way to reclaim back control from these oppressive systems. Fast forward today, it's a different approach, but similar ethos, because even though we recognize that most of these tech giants or corporations took over cyberspace, there's still alive the dream, and many cybernauts and psychonauts and researchers, and especially from the second psychedelic renaissance, started to look at the possibility of how technology can mediate these altered states.
I've taken off the headset. This reality. Can I come out now? What I felt when I was laying there on the beanbag and had the headset on and doing this, I was sort of melting away, like melting into the visuals and the audio and the breath. And as I melted, I began to get fearful because of my environment.
Yeah. Oh, no, definitely. I mean, and what you're describing is exactly why what people in the psychedelic world talk about set and setting. Like, what's your mindset coming in? And what is the setting that you're having the experience in, right? And
the combination exactly of technologies like neurofeedback.
After the day that you had in a place like this,
XR,
you wouldn't want to have a full psychedelic experience.
Haptic
right?
suits, like this, smell, sensory realities, hyper realities. All these combinations could potentially become as powerful as drugs. There's so many techniques in storytelling, especially at the cutting edge of storytelling in hyperreality. Curtis Hickman, the inventor of the hyperreality concept, is pushing really the boundaries of how stories can be made and can be built in ways that impossible experiences basically can be manifested. And Curtis is using a lot of illusion design techniques and magic theory to reinforce the secondary belief that this reality that I am in right now is real, and using that within a particular format and story. But I must say that he's playing with IP that has the money to being for him to be able to create such things like Marvel, Ghostbusters, Star Wars, you know. But I see the potential of these type of stories with a very cyberdelic edge that can fit within transformational culture. And McKenna quoted, "The drugs of the future will be like computers, and the computers of the future will be like drugs." The dream is still alive.
Jose Montemayor Alba there at Games Ground Festival in Berlin, and the reporter was Louise McMahon. Fidelio Trio's Winter Music Festival is happening this weekend in Dublin between the Library of Belvedere House and the Botanic Gardens. But events start this year with They Danced While the Musicians Played, a collaboration between the trio and piper Killian Villelli of the world-travelling band Lunacer, featuring a set of new commissions from Irish composers inspired by the paintings of Killian's father, John B. Villelli, which often feature traditional musicians lost in music. Culturefile spoke to Killian Villelli back in Armagh after... How long would it be?
It's a long time now, but I haven't lived here for 30 years. But I was back this weekend. My father runs a traditional music piping weekend, so I came back to play at that. And it was called the William Kennedy Piping Festival. And, you know, obviously Illan piping is to the forefront of it, but they've always had pipers from all over the world the nearby ones, like Scottish and some French usually, but it was interesting this year they had a piper from Iran. It kind of had two chanters, you know, so it was, they call it a double chanter. My father's known as for founding the Armagh Pipers Club, but his career has always been an artist. He's a painter mostly. I suppose he's always combined the two things by doing paintings of musicians, traditional musicians mostly. And so he's loads of paintings of fiddle players and pipers and flute players and all sorts of things like that. When this project came about, Dara Morgan had, it was a pre-COVID idea that got pushed forward a good few years. He had the idea of getting composers that would sort of understand how the Uilleann pipes might work in a classical format, and he got seven composers to write pieces for the pipes, and the Fidelio Trio. And he used the idea of my father's paintings as a kind of a starting point, as a point of inspiration. So each piece is related to one of his paintings. My father he's been painting for, I think he said recently, he's been exhibiting for 64 years, and he's currently just done a big exhibition. It's actually in Dublin the night before.
Do you feature in any of them? Do your brothers feature in them?
Yeah, there's a couple that are specific, but a lot of his paintings aren't specifically a person. You know, they're kind of, they're thick oils and often inspired by certain musicians, but they're not detailed sort of. He does do portraits, but it's not a big part of his work, you know. He's always had a huge passion for the music. He was an artist first, you know. He didn't grow up playing traditional music. He learned that after he was away at art school in Edinburgh. Like, he spends a lot of time with music and sitting in sessions, and I think he's always tried to capture that sort of trance that, you know, the musicians find themselves in a, you know, because the majority of Irish music is not performance, it's not concerts and CDs, you know, that gets publicised and gets written about, but the main bulk of Irish traditional music is casual playing, you know. And it used to be in houses, it's now in pubs. People play for hours and then, often with strangers, and they get deep into the tunes and sort of tend to, yeah, get into a trance-like state. Interesting for me because I can read. I played in orchestras when I was at school, played the flute for years and saxophone and stuff, so the reading was not an issue for me, but I was always used to the conductor counting us in. I'd never played in a chamber group, so that was a difficulty for me, and then I started to realise how a band like the Fidelio Trio work, and that there's a lot of nods and arm movements, and it's interesting because it's almost a bit more like traditional music in that way. Everybody's not just buried in their own page and waiting for the conductor to cue them in. It's much more interactive. Dara Morgan, he played traditional music when he was younger, decided to concentrate on violin, classical playing. I remember when he called me 5 or 6 years ago to get this off the ground. You know, he said he'd always wanted to do something with traditional music. Fidelio Trio do a lot of very interesting music. They're always having composers write sort of challenging music. They're very adventurous, and they go into sort of almost avant-garde type stuff at times. So they're always looking for something new to do, and he had wanted to do something with traditional music, so I'm happy he asked me.
That there are some, I think I'm not hearing the pipes. So you do have a rest during it then. I think the Miholo Sulu on Mel Mercier one, you're not in there, or are you down the mix somewhere?
No, I sit that one out. It's a beautiful piece, but I don't know if that would make it onto the Elm pipes.
I definitely hear you in a piece by Niall Vallely, who's a relative, obviously.
He's my older brother, and he's one of these people. And like Neil Martin, who's one of the other composers, they play both traditional music and write for all sorts of formats and classical music, and write pieces that are some sort of fusion between the two. And now my brother Niall, he played the pipes as well. You know, if somebody didn't have some sort of an understanding of the pipes, they could write stuff that just wouldn't be playable, you know.
Tell us a little bit about Swaggering. That's Niall's piece.
Well, he kind of took, you know, the painting was called The Swaggering, or The Swaggering Jig, and that's the name of a well-known traditional tune that we would have grown up playing. The Bothy Band played The Swaggering Jig. And Niall, he sort of took it apart a bit, and he had sections in 7/8 and 9/8, but not with a 9/8 is a slip jig in Irish music, but it's a straightforward three groups of three, and he kind of twisted around, and it was 4/3/2 and stuff like this. And that one is, yeah, I was, when he presented that one to me, I knew that was going to be a tough one to do, but I think it's a great one for the group. If I can keep my concentration, that it usually goes okay.
Killian Vallely there, and the Fidelio Trio Winter Music Festival continues over the weekend. FidelioTrioWinterMusicFestival.com for all the info. And finally, this time, everything you can learn about art from a 7-year-old. For their current Take a Breath exhibition at IMA, the museum went with a bold choice. They created an exhibition audio guide with the help of a group of children whose encounters with the art are yours to listen to as you wander the corridors in Kilmainham. Culturefile spoke to IMA's head of research and learning, Sheena Barrett, about the museum's kids' audio guide and a meet 'em where they live philosophy.
Let's do a breath meditation together. Breathe in for four and then out for four.
One of the fantastic things about being in a museum is that you get to facilitate work with children of all ages. And we would be very much interested in the voice of the child coming through in that. From an education perspective, we've really moved away from the kind of didactic model of bringing children in to be told what they're looking at, but rather to facilitate a conversation that explores the work collectively. Sometimes that's through very specific methodologies, like maybe visual thinking strategies, and other times it's through effective use of probing questions.
Hi, my name is Penny and I'm 5 years old. This artwork is by Isabel Nolan. It is called Deep Time Day. When I first looked at this artwork, I saw the sun and the sea, the trees, the stars.
Because I suppose we all bring our own cultural references to an artwork, whatever our age. We're all at different stages of aesthetic development. And being able to facilitate conversations around it allows everyone to share what it is that they're seeing and really adds layers of richness to what we might be looking at in a way that doesn't happen when you're just looking at it by yourself or if you're just being told what to see.
Hi, my name is Rose and I'm 7 years old. This artwork is by Khadija Say.
So Rose, who's seven, is encountering a series of black and white prints and they're a photographic series called In This Space We Breathe, and they're really looking at the spiritual significance of breath within the black experience. Khadija is looking at ancestral rituals.
These photographs are all self-portraits and look very old, despite not being made too long ago. In these photos, we see the artists holding
It's really sort of poignant in a way that Rose has picked up on this idea of a talisman and rituals and specific experiences that relate to small objects that are signs or symbols, because of course that's also something that we see within gaming. And for her, she's making references to the worlds that she inhabit that include Mario, and where a particular character has the capacity to turn into a princess if she can find the right tools to do so. So while, you know, as an adult, we can kind of think, oh, isn't that cute that she's making reference to princesses? At the same time, there is something very powerful about the characters that Khadija Say has set up in this series and the kind of symbolism that she has within it. So I think it's to really just acknowledge that we, our own references that we bring to things, add to the power of what the artist is trying to communicate.
What things help to make you feel better? The one thing that makes me feel better is playing Super Mario. There's a character called Toadette and she can turn into like a princess and the others can't. So I usually play her just in case I'm allowed to turn into them.
For some people, reference points might be particular philosophers they've read. For some others, it might be the story that they're reading at the moment or something they've watched on TV or like with one of our youngest participants, when she talks about something really special that's happened for her and a place that she likes to be, and that is where Isabel Nolan's work reminds her of being by the sea. Although Isabel Nolan's work is more to create this peaceful moment that is, you know, Isabel talks about being inspired by stained glass and the experience of being in a cathedral and the kind of peace that comes with that, and also thinking about sunlight and landscape, and that it has this child thinking about going fishing.
I've caught 2 fish. It was a competition and I caught a trophy. It was from a long time ago.
It's this sense of what's special, what's magical for you, and so it's kind of gorgeous to think about. That was the curator's intent and the artist's intent was to create this space that was peaceful and magical that could hold you after some quite difficult moments throughout the exhibition. And that, you know, you have a five-year-old absolutely picking up on that and sharing what's magical for her.
The title of the work is in Irish and means the Mourne Mountains are cold tonight. My favourite thing to say in Irish is Ispralam Ammoniocht. That means I like hurling.
As an adult visitor to the museum, if you don't come with any knowledge, you may pick it up from the little text on the wall. So in a way, we're primed with knowledge about the artist's biography and what happened in Grenfell. And then that's our reception of it. But for these children, that, you know, that's not, they're not primed in the same way. So how do you prime them?
Well, that's it. I mean, I suppose the kind of tenets that we hold on to, like an artist's biography that show the trajectory of their practice. Is this someone, you know, when you go to an international museum, is this someone famous I should be looking at? You know, as you sort of run through the Rijksmuseum and try to figure out which works you should capture. You know, for a child, that like sense of who's famous, who's not, who's part of the canon, who's not, these are not interesting things. It's much more an emotional connection, or a connection to, you know, when we look at stages of aesthetic development, it can be that they might initially look at list making. What can I readily identify? And then start to create a narrative. How do I build a story upon that? And then does that story connect to my life, and in what way? And then what feeling am I left with? And I think that that's a really nice thing that's come through in terms of the audio descriptions, is that sort of movement through, here's what I see, here's what this makes me feel like. And then they have also suggested some prompts for the viewer. It's like, you know, well, what do you like to do? Where do you like to be? What does it feel like for you to experience this? And how does this connect to your life?
I love it. And I just learned how to swim like properly without holding my breath on holidays last summer. Not last summer, like this summer. So it's very different than how I normally did it, but it's very fun and it's kind of relaxing. The sea is very beautiful. So
as we build out on this, we have a big collections show coming up in January. And so that will be on site for a longer period of time. So it gives us the opportunity to develop much more tools that the public will be able to engage with the show around. But we are already talking to a child who's three, for example, about one of those works, but right up to much more young adults as well. So really, I think the broad spectrum, age is just one way of having a number of different lenses to think about artworks. You know, all of our backgrounds, the kind of households we grow up in, the sort of things that we're exposed to, the things that are of interest to us. I suppose a lot of the work that I would have been involved in over the years in terms of visual thinking strategies is really that we think about what is the aesthetic development level of the group that you're working with. And each, as individuals, our level of exposure, our understanding of visual literacy, the kind of cultural references that we've encountered to date. I suppose a lot of pedagogical thinking would suggest that we meet people where they're at, and that we create the kind of spaces that allow for a safety within that, so that whatever it is that we're looking at, that we feel safe to explore it. I suppose while we want people to come to IMA and enjoy an exhibition and enjoy a particular artwork, our aim is not for them just to learn about one piece of art. It's to really experience what it's like to look, and to maybe take some of that looking and learning onto, you know, once they move outside of the museum and look at the world in a different way.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you for listening. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Sheena Barrett and collaborators there, and you can find the Take a Breath Kids Guide on SoundCloud. And as you heard there, IMA's forthcoming three-year collection exhibition, Art as Agency, which opens in February, will have its own kids audio guide. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more critics saying the darnest things next Saturday tea time. Meanwhile, we're very much on blue sky these days. Hope to see you there soon. Do say hello. Till then, bye now.